fun.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Journey to Success. My name is Brad Zales, and I will be sitting in as guest host for our buddy Tom Cunningham. And I just want to say, why am I sitting here in the hot seat today? Well, I believe Tom asked me to do this because I've been an entrepreneur for over 30 years. I've started over 8 businesses, one of which I took public on NASDAQ during the dot-com boom. And for those of you who are listening in today, I want you to go get a pen and piece of paper, because on this elusive journey of success, sometimes we get some bumps in the road. And I think if shows like this actually help you to find those secrets that can help you be successful. And I'm very excited today to have Ron Klein on our show. And I want you to take a moment to sit back and imagine every transaction that is done per day with a credit card. Think about it at the mall, all the shops, all the stores where they swipe a credit card. Now step back for a moment and look at all the transactions that are happening right here, right now, in real time, that are all on that magnetic strip. Well, that's our guest today, Ron Klein. He invented that technology. So let me get into his bio. Ron, you're on the line?
I'm here. I'm delighted to be here, Brad. Thank you.
You bet. Ron is a man who accomplishes extraordinary things. He is a problem solver. Every solution has resulted in monumental change, either in a new invention or a simple solution. His innovative ideas have changed the world. He is the inventor of the magnetic strip on the credit card, validity checking system, the developer of computerized systems for real estate multiple listings, the MLS services, voice response for the banking industry, and the bond quotation and trade information system for the New York Stock Exchange. Ron's latest patent is for the device called the Ident-i Fire, which enables a visually impaired person the ability to identify a person or item when in physical range of that person or item. It utilizes a smartphone, camera, glasses, and an earpiece. He was the founder and CEO of his public company, Technitrend Incorporated Data Communications, which he sold to a major insurance company. He was the founder and CEO of General Associates, Inc., Financial Data Services. He successfully negotiated a contract with the New York Stock Exchange for General Associates to become a licensed financial vendor to disseminate quotes and trades of New York Stock Exchange listed bonds. He developed a video display system to support trading of U.S. government bonds, bills, notes, and government agency products. All primary financial institutions that trade government issues through intermarket financial brokers use these systems. General Associates provided the video display systems with a variety of other products to the American Stock Exchange, Philadelphia Stock Exchange, New York Futures Exchange, and New York COMEX Exchange. He's a business analyst, consultant, mentor, problem solver, and speaker. Ron will analyze your business challenges, ideas, and provide you with the answers and solutions to move you in a positive direction. Ron and his wife, Arlene, have a special love for animals and serve to create a better tomorrow for all animals. And Ron, by the way, is a great athlete. He's a senior Olympian bicyclist medal winner and sailing enthusiast. Please welcome to the show, Ron Klein.
Wow, what a bio. My God, that sounds so impressive, and I'm just a plain, simple guy.
you know, when
I listened to you, Brad, and you were saying all those things, and I'm saying to myself, who the heck is this guy? I mean, doesn't he sleep? well, what can I tell you?
You seem to be the smartest guy in the room.
No, well, because there's no one else here.
Well,
I'm the only one in the room. Sure.
Yeah, there you go. Let me ask you a quick question. And anybody listening in, this is how entrepreneurs think. You see a hole in the market, or you see a problem, and you say, how can we solve that? And I think you think very similarly with inventing things. Am I correct in that?
You are, and this is the way I've handled my life all through my life. I don't sit in a think tank and say, well, I'm an inventor, and what am I going to invent today? That's not my situation. When I see a problem automatically, problem is no longer a word in my vocabulary. I take that thing called problem and I immediately turn it into a challenge. And when I look at it as a challenge, I say, okay, I remember when I was in high school, they gave me word problems with a lot of superfluous information there. Get rid of that, because I look at the problem, which I now call a challenge, and I say, what's the given and what's the solution I'm looking for? Very simple. In other words, let me sift out, what am I really given here? What am I working with? And what is it, the final solution that I'm looking for? And everything else in between is really just a journey. And through that journey, there's multiple hurdles. And what takes you through those hurdles is the stickability and
sustainability.
The stickability, the sustainability, and the flexibility. That's what's so important. Flexibility. See, I didn't have it this morning, but now I have it. So it's the stickability and the flexibility. And as you approach that hurdle, you look at that as another challenge, solve that, and move on. And that's the way I think, and that's the way you can really solve problems. If you simplify it, you can handle it. If you don't simplify it, it becomes a total confusion factor. Okay?
That's perfect. I mean, I have looked at your website, and you're considered the grandfather of possibilities. And I like what you just said. This is phenomenal. I hope people are taking notes this morning, because this is how you attack hurdles. I mean, for myself, I can get overwhelmed. And when I stop for a moment and I sit with my wife and she says, well, break it down into small, easy chunks, that makes it a lot easier. And you basically brought that down to some very strategic points. And I want to shift gears for a little bit. You talked about stickability. You want to talk about your book?
Well, that's interesting. When I finally decided, well, I'm a failure at three things. Retirement. I tried it three times and I failed at it. So unfortunately, I figured if I'm a failure at retirement, I'm going to have to continue to work. So I needed a tool, because I was going out to do a lot of speaking, and I was invited to a lot of colleges and a lot of business enterprises. And I figured you've got to have a tool. You've got to leave these people with something. Not a business card. I don't like the idea of shoving a business card in someone's face. But if I leave them with something, a small little book of 100 pages, giving them my history and how I handled problems and my lessons for life, that would be great. Let alone am I a poor writer. Sometimes I don't even spell correctly. My wife happens to be an author. However, she's not an author of biographies, but she does a lot of animal writing. And I would sit across from her in my office, and I would say, hey, hon, take a look at this. How does this sound? And I was pestering the heck out of her. Finally, she said, do you have some kind of a manuscript there? And I said, I've got a lot of little notes. She said, well, take this thing, hand it to me, and I'll give it back to you when it's finished. She ended up writing this beautiful little book called The Grandfather of Possibilities, Wall Street to Main Street, and that's it. So that was published what I did was I self-published it. I figured, let's get it out, because we need a tool, and I can't start going to publishers to put this thing together, because now I'll even be further confused. So I decided to learn real quick, how do you self-publish? And doing that, in fact, now I end up teaching it. But doing that, I was able to self-publish the book, and we use that as a great tool. And it is available on my website. It's available through Amazon. And we use quite a bit of them. I've produced many thousands just to give away to all my audience and all of the people that I speak with. So that's the book, and that's how it was created. I can't take the credit for it. It's my lovely wife that did it.
I do the same with my book as well, because I wrote the book Liquid Leadership, From Woodstock to Wikipedia, which delves deeply into the generational divide that's come along due to technology shifting behavior in a new generation that's been raised with toys that talk to them, science fiction as science fact, and a video game mentality. So when I was writing my book, I would leave the manuscript on a coffee table in the morning, and my wife would take a look at it, and with a big red pen, she would say, "This makes no sense whatsoever." So I know, you know, without our wives, I don't think we would get to the mountain quite as easily. So hats off to our wives here today.
Yeah. In fact, you know, I joke with her constantly. We're married this November we'll be married 54 years, so we're fossils. I mean, we're a legend.
Wow.
So I keep telling her, I say, this seems to be like it's going to work out, so let's start living together.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's beautiful.
My best friend.
You know, I think there's some romance tips left in you there. I think, you know, the key to 54 years, you gotta email Ron and ask him, you know, what's the key to you know, a long-term relationship. So
communications, and your wife has to be your best friend also.
There you go. I agree. Everybody, you writing this down?
Thank you.
Now, the magnetic strip, then, this is kind of very interesting and right up my alley, because I gave a keynote presentation at MasterCard International last October. And it was very interesting because they're pushing for a cashless society. And the center of my talk is how to bring ideas together, because we have one group, mainly the baby boomers, myself included, traditionalists as well sometimes, where they are thinking in linear terms. They're thinking in a beginning, a middle, and an end. And they do this with their careers. They do this with thinking. And as you know, after you reach a certain point in your career, you get the status symbol of the corner office. And this is juxtaposed against a new generation that wants to work in open space, open source, and have these open areas where it's mass collaboration. Nobody looks for the corner office as a status symbol. It's really what you bring to the table today. And these two different work styles have really come about because of technology changing and shifting behavior. And, I mean, there's a couple of other factors, including child-centric parenting and teaching, that have flattened hierarchy in these young people's minds. But I want you to talk a little bit about how the magnetic strip that you created actually started what Bill Gates calls friction-free capitalism, this smoother transaction around the world where we are much more connected and we have much more speed in our transactions.
Well, no idea should ever be vetoed, and that's most important. How this came about, it started back in 1964, and I finally came up with the finalized idea and worked on it and developed it in 1966. And around that time, a director of a major department store came and said to us, "We have a problem. We have a tremendous queuing problem. We have a long-term problem when it comes to a point-of-sale operation, and things are being slowed down. How can we speed up the operation of making charge purchases?" They called them charge purchases at that time. They didn't even call them credit purchases. And I looked at it, and I simplified it again. And I said, well, geez, that's fairly simple. Because what they would do, the credit card companies would provide to the merchants every month a long list. It was actually a book of negative account numbers. All the account numbers that were questionable, and they really would like to talk to these people or even retrieve their cards. And the merchant at a point of sale would have to go through this long list that was chronologically in order to see if your number appeared, and if your number didn't appear, you were good to go. So the only thing that they had for credit purchases was this piece of plastic with your name embossed on it and the account number. And I looked at that situation and I said, well, I think that's a fairly simple problem to solve. Why don't we take all of those negative account numbers that are being given every month by the credit card companies to the merchants and put those into a central database? Well, in 1966, central database wasn't even an invented word. They didn't have, there was no internet. They were, you know, the only thing they had was these mass memory systems, and for high speed, we were utilizing magnetic drums that were spinning at a rapid rate, and we could then store all those numbers on that magnetic drum system. So that's what I did. I took all the negative account numbers that would come in every month from every credit card company and store them on this revolving high-speed magnetic drum. Then we provided a connection from the point-of-sale location to that with cabling throughout the department stores and the merchants' locations with a keypad. So now the merchant, all they had to do was key in the number with the keypad. It would go up to the system, check it, and if the credit was good and it was not a negative number, the person was good to go, and it really would speed up the operation. And then we took it one step further. We made the automatic embossing machine. Well, we took the embossing machine that they would use by hand and turned that into an automatic embossing machine so that if the credit was good, it would automatically emboss the sales slip, and that would even speed up operations further. If the credit wasn't good and it was a negative account number, it would lock the card in the machine. So now the merchant would get credit for holding the card, and they didn't have to give it back to the purchaser, and they would just say, well, your card was bound up in this machine. We'll have to call the company and take care of it. So that took care of, that was the validity checking system. It was actually the first credit checking system in the country. And then I figured, right, we've got to put a little bit of smarts in the piece of plastic to even speed it up a little quicker. And at that time, I thought of taking the plastic card and making it look like an IBM punch card. And I'm sure most of your listeners don't even remember what an IBM punch card looked like. It used what they called... Do you remember? Okay. Well, it used
a
holler
code. Yeah, I
had to
program computers.
Okay. Well, what I did was I took the plastic credit card and used the first 12 rows of the Hollerith code, and that was the numeric portion, and we would punch the holes in the card and use that and then knock off the little edge so it would look like a punch card, and then build a little reader to look like an IBM reader. However, that wasn't really cost effective. And right around that time that I was working on that operation, reel-to-reel tape recorders came out. And I said, geez, I've got a great idea. If we could take a piece of tape and record the account number on that piece of tape and then build a device that mimics a tape recorder. Remember years ago when you would speed up the reel-to-reel tape, it would sound like Mickey Mouse, and then we would slow it down, it would sound like Dracula. Well, what we did was we took the data that we recorded on the little strip of tape and used what we call start-stop synchronization. So when you put the card in slow and pull it out rapidly, it looks like it's being read by a capstan. Or when you slide it through a mechanism, you're actually simulating and mimicking a tape recorder. And it would read, and so we didn't care too much about the speed as long as it was fast enough to read it, and it would look for the synchronization characters on that little strip and then read everything else's data. So that's how the magnetic strip came about to be a device today. Now, the big question is, and everyone constantly asks me this, Ron, how did it, how in the world, through this world of technology where everything is built in with obsolescence, how has it survived so many years? Have you thought about that, Brad?
You know, I talk about planned obsolescence in my book, and it's a big subject of mine. And yes, I am curious how it kept up to date and up to speed with today's technology.
Well, think about this. The magnetic strip on your credit card does not require energy. And anything that doesn't require energy can't radiate. If it can't radiate, I can't come behind you with a scanner and scan your pocket and take that data away from you. How about that?
That's incredible.
So that's what I thought about. Isn't that incredible? However, you know, in Europe now, they're coming out with all kinds of electronic chips and putting so much information on the chips. That's fine. That's great. But actually, what they're doing along with that is building devices to encapsulate that card to protect it from the radiation, and not protect it from the radiation, but keep it from radiating so that it can't be scanned or pirated. So now you have to be concerned with a shield on the card, instead of just the card itself. So I don't know how long the magnetic strip will survive, but that's the reason why it's still out there.
I think it's
so there's a little story for your readers.
it's a simple and...
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead, Brad.
Can you hear me?
Sure, go ahead.
Hello? It's a fascinating piece of technology and history all rolled into one because, you know, you look at companies now that are giving you the capacity to swipe a credit card right off of your smartphone, like Square and Intuit has their Go payment reader. And all these mobile credit card swipe devices are still using your technology, actually.
Right. It's so simple and so easy and so accurate. The only thing you have to be careful of, and I'm sure your listeners have experienced this, when you stack the cards in your wallet or in your purse, you don't want to take the magnetic strips and put them back to back because now one magnet is affecting the other magnet. It doesn't. It would have to go through a prolonged term of being confronted with that. However, when you see a wallet, in a man's wallet, they're actually staggered. The slots are staggered so that the magnetic strips aren't back-to-back or not on top of one another. So that's the only thing you have to be concerned with. There is a wear factor, but, you know, we've all had magnetic strips on our cards for many, many years, and we walk around with them for many years, so there's really no loss. But the fact is that it does not require energy. You don't have to worry about charging a battery.
It's phenomenal to think about the leap that has taken place in the last 25 years. The Industrial Revolution took over 100, 150 years to go all around the world, and the Computer Revolution only took 25 years to go around the world, and all of a sudden we're in the information age and everything is speeding up. A lot of today's youth, and this is a concern for older generations, and that is the security issue of sharing data and being on Facebook and being on Twitter, and just like we're all out in the open, and the security issue is a very big issue today. Maybe not so much amongst Gen Y, but baby boomers like myself, we're kind of like, there's a lot of information being shared very quickly. And now a lot of people don't even know this, but the machine-to-machine traffic, or rather communication, has surpassed human communication on planet Earth. The machines are talking. And we have data nodes. We have computer chips from Intel that have an RFID receiver and broadcaster in there. So all the machines are beginning to talk. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Do you have a concern about cybersecurity in this digital age as well?
I do. However, I don't know what we can do about that. It's a mushrooming effect that really can't be stopped. And I think people have to be cognizant of it and be a little bit more aware of being careful as to the kind of information they put out into cyberspace. One of the things that has always concerned me, however, it's an asset, but it's also a detriment, is the storage of everything that your all of your contacts and all of your email information is out into cyberspace as a backup. And is that accessible? Is it accessible from others and through others? And it's only protected through your email address and your password. So that is of concern, and I think about that all the time. I don't know how many other people think about that concern.
I'm very concerned about it, and I'll tell you where I'm mostly concerned, and that is marketers are allowed to access your data when you say yes to any application or you go into a particular social media site. And data mining, people don't realize the power and the depth of data mining because it's really about cross-linking the data. Like, let's say, here's a good example for our listeners. I may call a few people once in a while in Pennsylvania, let's say. And those people I will be on the phone with for about an hour. And if a data reader is looking at that, they're going, okay, where can we match up some of the profiles that he's friends with on LinkedIn and Facebook and see that he has friends that are interconnected with each other. And if he likes, let's say, flat-screen digital TVs, we're going to sell some ads to them as well. So there's this constant looking for data and connections to that data and things like this. And computers are handling this now. It's looking for the breadcrumbs, basically. And I've noticed this. I don't know if you've noticed this, but if you're on a social network or if you're on a website, and let's say I mention Star Wars, for the next 3 days, from the text that I type, I'm going to get ads about Star Wars. So even your browser is reading your data and linking you
exactly
to marketers
exactly
and things like this. And this is my big concern, because we are no longer in the land of the free and the home of the brave. We're in the land of the, hey, whatever marketer has paid the top dollar to get the list of people who buy Star Wars items. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because that really is the big concern for me in cybersecurity.
Well, I have one quick answer for that. Use your communication capability from your PC or from your smartphone in a limited fashion. Don't spend your entire life with your thumbs on that keyboard or on that display. And I guess that's really the only way you can handle it. It's not going to stop. It's only going to get worse. And you have to be cognizant of constantly that whatever you're putting out there can be infiltrated one way or another. So it's strictly for convenience and communications, and limit your the amount of information that you transmit to and from with a careful thought as to don't expose too much that you don't want to expose. And I guess that's the only way to handle it at this point, Brad. There is no other solution.
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. Ron, are you saying get away from the technology once in a while and go ride a bicycle? Is that what you're saying?
Well, you have to understand, I'm not a young boy anymore. You know, when I've been involved in a lot of innovation. I've had public companies. I've developed a lot of equipment. I spent 25 years at the New York Stock Exchange just developing and automating the exchange. So I'm a great believer in automation and data. However, I've seen it from the early days into where it is now, and I had no trouble working with the little 3x5 cards in my pocket as a database. So
right,
maybe we should spend a little bit more time taking a walk in the park, staying away from that PC, staying away from that cell phone, leave the cell phone home every once in a while, and get on your bike and take a ride.
Mm-hmm.
I do that every day. So as much as I'm an advocate for technology, I think we've gone a little bit too far too quick.
I agree. I agree with you. If you were to talk to a group of students that were just starting out, let's say, what do you recommend for their career as far as college, as far as going into the workforce or doing something with their life? Would you want to talk about that a little bit?
I feel that probably one of the best approaches to an education, and that's both scholastically and business-wise, is to go to college, receive your bachelor's, work at an internship if there are available, whatever you feel seems to be of interest to you. So during your bachelor period, go after some of these internships and be exposed to different forms of business and knowledge and intermingle with other people and thinking. And what I believe in tremendously is that don't go on for further education right after your bachelor degree. Go out into the field, go out into the workforce, take a job with a large organization if you're able to obtain that, to get the experience of how a large organization functions, how it works. And it's not that important as to does it have to be specifically in your field, because business is business. Products are products, independent of what it is. I'm not saying that it has to be your future and your career forever, but have some exposure. And don't be afraid to leave a position after a while and move to a smaller company and try that. Once you have a feel for what you really like and what your thoughts are as far as where you see your future, then go back for further education if it requires that to move on to a specialized field, you need an additional degree, in an additional master's degree in that specific function. But I guess what I'm really saying is that interrupt your career between the bachelor program and the master's program with a work in process, and then have some exposure. Expose yourself to both small and large operation. And I think that would probably be the advice that I would give to any young student from freshman on in college today. And I think an internship basically would really help tremendously during probably the junior year and senior year in your college career.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my basic advice.
There you have it. That's a great, great answer, because experience, nothing beats experience. It really doesn't.
Exactly.
I'm gonna ask you a question, and I mean, you may have already talked about this. I'm not sure, but what would you say, Ron, is your favorite accomplishment so far?
My favorite accomplishment is being able to manage my pain. Because everything else, all the technology and all of the inventions and all of the things that I've done in my career, that was my job. And I'm a creator, I'm a thinker, so I did what I was supposed to do. And I was put here on this earth to make my contribution, and my contribution was in the form of technology and creations and problem solving. So that's not what I'm very impressed with, and that's not impressive at all to me. I did my job, just like everyone else out there is doing their job. What I feel I've really accomplished and I'm very proud of is over the last 20 years, I suffer with a tremendous amount of pain because I've had a lot of I have an inoperable spine condition along with degenerative disc disease and spinal stenosis. So I suffer with pain every day, terrible sciatic pain in my leg and my back. And I can't take any medication because that would numb my brain and I wouldn't be able to do my consulting work. And that's just a patch. That's a Band-Aid, and I'm not interested in that. So I've pretty much trained myself to handle that pain in a way where I tell everybody I've trained my brain to handle the pain. So it's a little rhyme. But I discovered that along with this pain as it became intense, I started a therapy program of exercise, and one of the exercises 20 years ago is I started riding a bicycle. And I noted that when I was on, I have bone on bone. I don't have any discs in my lumbar region, and that's why I have this intense pain. And it's inoperable because if they did operate, I'd be confined to a chair, and I'd be totally immobile, and that would create other problems for me. So that's not an option as far as I'm concerned. But I discovered when I started riding a bicycle, bending over on a road bike, it opened up the facet joints in my spine and my lumbar, stopped pinching the nerves, and I was totally pain-free. So here I am riding a bike every day, pain-free, but yet I can't walk more than 100 yards or stand for more than 10 minutes without totally intense pain. So I felt that I really had a tremendous accomplishment. And that satisfied me tremendously. And then I discovered that the more I ride the road, the more proficient I became, and I started riding a little bit faster and a little bit longer, and I started competing in some of the triathlons only as the cyclist in a team, not the swimmer or not the runner. And I started winning medals because I became so proficient. And I was so delighted with that I moved on at the county level here in the state of Florida, and I said, well, geez, let me see if I can compete at the county level. And I was winning medals at the county level. Well, I went all the way up to the top and became a senior Olympian, and in 2003, I was athlete of the year in the state of Florida for senior levels and was a gold medalist. That's
phenomenal.
Really means more to me than making a bunch of widgets. How's that?
That's incredible. You know, you're like never give up, never surrender. And I think a lot of people, maybe some young people listening, maybe think that once you get to a certain age, you just sit down and relax. And I love the fact that you're driven every day, not only with your mind, but your body. And This is phenomenal, Ron. I love it.
You know, a friend of mine, Les Brown, who's a well-renowned speaker, a known speaker, he always said to me, he said, Ron, make sure you live life to the fullest, and when you die, you want to die empty. Don't die with anything else left in you, so you've got to die empty. So I go around telling everybody, you know, if you stand still, they're going to throw dirt on you, so keep moving, don't stop.
So true. I love Les Brown.
Right.
Anything else you want to talk about? I mean, you've talked about being an athlete, your technological accomplishments. We've talked a little bit about cybersecurity. What else do you want to add to this interview before we close?
Well, the dangerous things to talk about is politics and religion. So, I have my thoughts there. But I don't have anything more to add from a technology standpoint, except as I see challenges, I'm going to continue to solve them, such as I have something ongoing now with the visually impaired that I'm working on. But I don't want to go into that. That's a long story, and you don't need that. I always had a thought when we had our major problem of the bailout and our downturn with the economy, and I never had a chance to go to Washington and talk to them about my basic, simple idea that, of course, it could have been developed into a hybrid idea, but I thought it could work. And I'm just going to make that statement now since you've given me some free time.
Sure, absolutely.
When we had this major downturn in the economy and the banks were not solvent, we actually took $17 trillion of the taxpayers' dollars to start bailing out. At that same time, I reviewed all of the primary mortgage debt that we had in this country, and that was $12 trillion. And I had an idea of saying, if the government would pay off every primary mortgage at a rate of 5% over 15 years, it would make the banks whole again. They would have money. People would be able to borrow money and go out and buy automobiles and so on and so forth. Of course, we'd have to slap the hands of the banks and say, don't ever do what you did before. And now the government would get their money back over a period of 15 years, even at a rate of 5%. However, they gave $17 trillion away that we didn't get back. And now the $12 trillion that would correct our financial problem in this country, we would be getting back with interest. And it would make the people whole, it would make the banks whole, and it could have turned our economy around. I'm not saying that's a very simple approach, but some form or some hybrid form of that, I think, would have worked. And I don't know why some of the politicians haven't come up with something like that and made it happen.
I'll tell you why. And without getting political, I don't believe in the right and the left paradigm. I believe that, you know, there's a holistic way of dealing with things. And that is this. You're looking at a group of people that have not been really exposed to true economics. What they've been exposed to is, I have money, I have a little bit of power, let me spread it around. And they don't understand the economic ramifications of that when it gets out of hand. And I believe it was Richard Mayberry who basically said, he talked about how presidents will hire 12 economists, the top economists of their day and their time, and when they don't give the answer that they like, they hire 12 more economists and
exactly.
get the answer that they want. And so this is not an exercise in logic. I actually believe that common sense is dead.
Mm-hmm. It was such a simple solution.
It is a simple solution, and you and I know that. But I don't think that they work for the common person anymore. And that's just my statement on it. But I think you bring to the table some logic, some common sense, and intelligence that it may be lacking. That's all.
Well, and think about, you know, where should the power and where should the sovereignty be placed? It should be back in the hands of the states. Each state should be highly competitive. You know, your question about how much the federal government should be involved. I think the federal government is extremely important for homeland security, but I think it's tremendously interfering with the competitive nature of where we should have the competition between the states for the best people, the best industries, and let them compete. Let each state function as a business. Yeah. Isn't that what we have in the Constitution? The Constitution, that's basically what I'm saying. Let the Constitution work and let each state be competitive for the best people, the best businesses, and that would really make our economy work. But
I agree.
Think I stepped out of my bounds from technology here.
No, I disagree, because technology, in order for a lot of the technology to be allowed today, this open source, IP peer-to-peer, the Constitution actually has to be suspended. You give up a lot of your rights when you enter a corporation and you get a paycheck. You give up a lot of your rights when you sign over and you say, I'm going to use this app. And I believe it was Thomas Jefferson who believed in individual sovereignty, which was the first time in 5,700 years that an individual had sovereignty. But it's Alexander Hamilton's America that we live in, because he believed that the states should have the rights and the federal government should be telling those states what to do. So I find it interesting. We come back to the Constitution. I am a big fan of the Constitution because I believe that liberty and capitalism, which is the results of liberty, has driven the greatest advancement in the human race in over 5,000 years. We've advanced more in the last 235 years than we have in five millennia, all because of what the Constitution represents. It is that powerful. So I don't feel that you went off course. I feel that it's also an addition. And I really am honored that you were on our call today.
Well, thank you. I apologize for monopolizing all this time, though.
You're the guest. This is your show.
Okay. I didn't realize that I was the only person on board here. But I felt really monopolizing.
Sometimes when I do a television show, I like to have a panel so we can throw around discussions and things like that. I used to do a show in Manhattan, and I would have a stand-up comedian, somebody from the mayor's office or the district attorney's office, and a scientist. And it would always end up in some amazing discussions. So, yes, I love those kind of things. But this is your show today.
Well, Ron, thank you.
You're welcome. I want to ask our listeners if you could tell them, how can they get in touch with you for your speaking, for your consulting, and also to get a hold of your book?
Well, the best way to get a hold of me is, of course, go directly to my website. And it's a simple website. It's www.ronklein.com. And that's R-O-N-K-L-E-I-N. And if anybody visits my website and goes to my contact page, I'll certainly email them my Lessons for Life as a gift. I'd be delighted to do that. But I think that, again, that's the best way to contact me. It's Ron, it's number 4, ronklein.com, and just www in front of it. And all of that information is there.
That's 4ronklein.com.
Right.
That's fantastic.
That's pretty simple.
I hope there are some killer inventions on the horizon. I'm sure you're working on some amazing things. Super top secret, I'm sure, right?
Yes, I'm working on a couple of major projects. One that's going to have an effect on lots of people in this country, and we're almost there. And this is vetted technology. So, yes, I can't stop. I'm not empty yet. So. So I have to keep moving, and that's my purpose. You know, there's a cute little joke I always tell at the opening to every one of my my sessions and my speaking engagements as to why it's so important for everybody to pay attention. I mean, everybody must learn something new every day. As simple as it could be, you must learn something new every day. Have I got 2 seconds for a quickie?
Yes. 2 seconds.
Okay. Here we go. Two men and a woman were driving to a mall. They parked the car, and they got out of the car, and the man held his head, the driver, and he says, oh, I locked the keys in the car. How horrible. He said, how about if I get a coat hanger and try and open up the window, and we'll do that. And the other passenger said, no, that's going to look like we're stealing the car. Don't do that. I've got a better idea. Let's break the little back window. I'll reach in and grab that. And the driver said, no, that's really going to look like we're trying to steal the car. And the woman walked up and said, you know, I don't know what you two guys are going to do, but you better do it quickly because it's starting to rain and the top is down. That's my motto, is why you must pay attention and learn something new every day.
Thank you so much. Our guest today, Ron Klein. Ladies and gentlemen, please go to his website, forronklein.com. Once again, I am Brad Zala sitting in for Tom Cunningham. I want to thank you so much for being on Journey to Success Radio today. Thank you, everybody, and take care. Thank you, Ron. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.